Dr. Rohr.
And if we could just dim the lights, please, it'll make your viewing slides a lot easier. Okay, good morning. Thanks again for allowing me to make my annual presentation. I appreciate the opportunity. I also want to thank you for last month's discussion on these set-asides. I thought it was very productive, and following that meeting, I went back with my staff. We had some interesting discussions about the set-aside, which I think I have some slides that I think will be of interest to you at the very end regarding the set-aside issue. My normal presentations that I've made have included these particular components, and I'll go through them one by one. The component on the seagrass restoration of the seaside bays, since we covered a lot of that previously, I will not deal with that issue except with regard to the issue I just said to set aside. So we'll start with the baywide status. Why are we so interested in SAV or seagrasses or whatever we call underwater grasses? Within the bay, these underwater plants are being used as sort of the canary in the cage. They're very sensitive to light, and they're being used as one of the sentinel species in following water quality. And it's, again, one reason why I enjoy making this presentation to you, because this is an issue that I think we're all interested in, all want cleaner water, better water quality, not just for SAV, but for all the animals that require good water quality. And the bay managers are using this as one of those sentinel species. There's a lot of effort, as you know, to improving water quality. And because these underwater plants respond very quickly to water quality, they are used as the litmus test for this improvement. I've mentioned this every single time. The Commonwealth of Virginia's water quality standards in 2007 includes SAV acreage in the attainment of the bay water quality standards. And so basically every acre is now being counted. And it's interesting when we deal with some of the management agencies, they always ask us exactly how many acres are in these areas. So let's go through the baywide status first. As I've mentioned before, VIMS monitors every single inch of the shoreline of the Chesapeake Bay. Each one of these red lines is a flight line from an aerial photograph. Our flight lines are essentially enough to cover all the shoreline and the SAV. The flights that we do with the contractor, they require very stringent conditions of low wind, minimal cloud cover, low tide, low turbidity, and low sun angle. We work very closely with the contractor to make sure that we have optimal photography to map the underwater grass beds. This program is funded by a variety of sources, primarily EPA, NOAA, Virginia Department of Environmental Quality, Maryland DNR, and the Virginia Coastal Program. Now, I haven't shown you this before, but we report all the SAV abundances by Chesapeake Bay segment. So each one of these little boxes that you see are polygons represents a segment identified by the Chesapeake Bay program. They define essentially either watersheds or portions of watersheds. So, for example, this is the Pamunkey River, and this is the Pamunkey River watershed, but it makes up part of the entire York River watershed. And each SAV segment has a reset segment has an SAV restoration target. Again, this was a picture I showed you before just to show you this is how we map the grass beds. This is a series of mosaics that we then use to map the SAV, and that green line basically encompasses all the grass beds. It's a very narrow fringe, and as we've talked about in the previous presentation, generally, in areas that are greater than 3 feet, we rarely see SAV, and it drops off dramatically, as you can see here in the Ware River and the Severn River. So what's going on bay-wide? First, this is a figure that I've been showing you every year, but now I've added the 2013 numbers because that's complete. We are working on the 2014 numbers, which, again, that will be part of the presentation next year. If you look at this is the entire Chesapeake Bay in terms of acres of SAV. We're at about 60,000 acres in 2013. It's down from what was a high of 90,000 acres, but certainly an improvement over 84. But this is a bay-wide number, and you'll see that there's a lot of variation by year. And our goal right now is 185,000 acres, which we're well short of that. We're about 32% of that goal. And again, there's a lot of interest in trying to get these grass beds back for all of the services they provide to the Chesapeake Bay. Okay, now this is kind of a relatively new slide. What I'm showing you are the SAV abundances by specific regions based on the salinity. So, and this is in this is color coded. So the lower area, which is the high salinity region, we call polyhaline. It's here. This is the mesohaline area where salinities are between 5 and 18. The oligohaline zone, which is the terminology used for low salinity, is 0.5 to 5 in tidal fresh. If we work our way around the bay, and the areas, of course, of interest to us, the lower bay, is the polyhaline zone, and here we are in 2013. And while it was an increase over 12, it's certainly very different than what we saw back in the 90s. And if you look at where we started in 78, we're not that much different. These red arrows represent the years in which we had significant heat in the summer that really drove back eelgrass quite a bit. And you can see the big drop from 05 to 06. We mapped SAV in 05 before the heat died back, and then 05 or 06 represents the drop that we saw that was driven by the excessive hot temperatures in the bay in that summer. The same thing in 2010. It was a really hot summer. It affected eelgrass. And again, this is 2011. You can see the big drop just in that. So that is a concern because, as you know, in the last 20 years, I think the last 10 years have been some of the hottest on record. And for eelgrass, this is a big concern, which I've mentioned before. But the overall picture in the polyhaline zone is not a pretty one and is a concern to a lot of the bay managers. The mesohaline zone, which incorporates most of the bay, and this is an issue that is kind of interesting because we used to have like four or five species of SAV in the mesohaline zone. We now basically just have one, which is widgeon grass, which is a very dynamic species, which is why you see a lot of variation. And right now, the numbers for 2013 were up from 2012, but overall, it bounces around and doesn't get anywhere near what we're looking at as a target. The same thing for the oligohaline zone. Again, a big drop. You know, we're not sure what's going on here, but again, a very narrow area that encompasses this section of the bay. The interesting thing about the tidal fresh, while there's a big drop in here, this was due to the back-to-back punches of Irene and Lee in 2011, dropped off huge amounts of turbid water and had a big influence on the biggest bed in the bay of the Susquehanna Flats. That bed actually survived and is starting to recover. So this represents a high point, but if you look at where we were in the time period of 1978 and where we are today, it's a lot, and of course these beds are recovering very fast compared to what we're seeing down here. So the big picture is that for the tidal fresh areas, there's still, you know, a lot of success that's going on here, but we are concerned about what's happening with the polyhaline zone. Now what I want to do is take you through a couple segments. I've mentioned that, for example, each segment has an SAV restoration target. This is the Mobjack Bay Pocosin Flats, which, again, is dear to heart because of the fact this is our backyard, and we've been watching this for years. If you look at where we are in 2013, we were up a bit. Here are these heat events, again, a drop in 2006 from 2005 and a big drop from 2010 to 2011, and they get recovery. So we see recovery following these heat events, but then the heat event, you know, drops it back, and then, again, we're hoping – you know, we'll see. We actually know there's a lot more in 2014. It's these repetitive heat events that really concern us. And if this is part of our future, you know, we are concerned about the long-term stability of these grass beds in the lower bay, which are one of the prime SAV habitats for the blue crab. But if you look at where we are in 1978, we're not that different from, actually, this is 84. Some of these have 78 numbers, but from 84, we're not that different. So, again, it's not a pretty picture of what's been happening with SAV in the Pocosin Mobjack Bay area. The second area that I want to highlight, and we've talked a lot about restoration of the seaside bays. This is the James River polyhaline area. This is the area between the Monitor Mamaroneck Bridge Tunnel and the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel. And you don't see a lot of grass in this time period. Well, in 1996, we received some money from the Recreational Fishing License Board to start some restoration work in the James River. And so I put a box around this area because in 96 we began transplanting seagrass, eelgrass in the James River. And while there's a lot of fluctuations and we see the heat events, this is probably one of the more success stories we have in the Chesapeake Bay. And what I'll do is I'll take you through here. Here's the Monitor Mamaroneck Bridge Tunnel. This is from one of our monitoring programs. It's a mosaic of aerial photographs. Here's the Monitor Mamaroneck Bridge Tunnel, the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel. This is Hampton Creek. And we did some transplanting here and here. and up here by the bridge tunnel. This is the monitor. This is the Merrimack Shores near Hampton Creek in 1997. These are the transplants in 1996. You know, we did this. This is a checkerboard design, and they've done really well. Here's the monitor Merrimack site. We had transplanted in 1997, 98. These are transplants, and you can see this is all grass. This is all grass. This is all recovering from these transplants. So when you look at this big picture, we believe that even though there's a lot of changes, these grasses have been persistent in this part of the James, which is, again, one of the few success stories that we have in the Chesapeake Bay regarding eelgrass. Other places that we planted, it has not been as successful. For example, in the Rappahannock River, we've had little success there. But again, to highlight that, you know, there is a place for restoration, as we've seen at the seaside, but we now have, you know, good evidence that there was a significant success here in the James River. Now, I haven't mentioned this before, but I have said something about water quality in the seaside bays. I wanted to mention that in the Chesapeake Bay, there is a lot of water quality work now underway, not just by VIMS, but by the Hampton Roads Sanitation District, Virginia Department of Environmental Quality. And we use, not we, but VIMS and other scientists are using a variety of techniques, from fixed stations that collect data every 15 minutes, surface buoys that collect data also, and what we call data flow runs that collect water over specific segments. And again, because there's such an interest in water quality and all the effort, and it's getting to be, in some cases, very expensive, we want to make sure that all the efforts to improve water quality by the regulations that are being imposed in terms of on land, then it's going to work. So I'm just kind of showing you that there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of data. This is just some of the data that comes from these fixed stations. This was a fixed station in the Pamunkey River that shows what happens with DO following a Isabel, and the DO dropped very rapidly following the Isabel, and it did recover, but over this time period, you know, that was a significant impact in those benthic animals that live here. But again, to show you the high-frequency data collection, and again, that is really important because it gives us an idea of what's happening with pulse events, not just going out once every 2 or 3 weeks, because we miss, in many cases, these significant events that have a direct impact. This slide basically shows a data flow, and these color brown means that the darker the brown, the dirtier the water. And so in many areas, this is the York River, this is Gloucester Point, this is the mouth of the river, Goodwin Island over here, this is Allen's Island. So that as you get closer to the mouth of the York River, the water gets clearer and clearer. And what we're using these data for are determining where are some of the best restoration sites for eelgrass in the lower bay. And this is also being done for a lot of the bay. And again, we wouldn't have any of these data without these high-frequency data collection devices that are now underway. And again, this is a website. This is what's called the VCOAST website, the Virginia Estuarine and Coastal Observing System. Every one of these little symbols represents a place where water quality is being collected, and it's online. People can now access it. It's open to the general public. But again, to show you that there's an awful lot of water quality monitoring underway so that we are able to use that data to better predict, you know, what may be happening with SAV in the bay, as well as other sources. So with that, I'm going to move on to the next stage, and you know, I can answer any questions at the end of the presentation if you have on that. But the Chincoteague Bay SAV Sanctuary was the second section that we've talked about. It was created back in the 2000 when we saw these large circular scars. This is the Chincoteague, Assateague Island, Chincoteague Town is down here. And these circular scars were created by individuals using this type of apparatus to dig for clams, which is very destructive. You know, the commission developed and approved a sanctuary in Chincoteague Bay. This is the Maryland-Virginia border, and that sanctuary was in green, and it was marked. The markers are gone, but we have the lat longs, and we watch this every year. Last year I made this presentation. We saw these circular scars. There were about 22 of them. In 2013, we mentioned this to the enforcement agencies, and when we looked at it this year, here's the 2012. When we looked at the photography for scars in 2013, we did not see a single circular scar. So I'd like to recognize, I guess, the enforcement agency may have touched base with the individual doing that. But, again, I think it's important you can see the line of where there were a lot of scars to where we are today. And I think this regular monitoring is important because, again, we watch, you know, all this activity, and it does play a role in trying to keep people from the activities that do damage the grass beds. Back to propeller scarring, and Mr. Erskine, you asked a question about how we know these are propeller scars, and I'd be more than happy to share with you the report that we did for the commission. We had a lot of ongoing discussions with the Hall Seiners, and we came up with a nice compromise that did not put additional regulations on the Hall Seiners, but again, this is the type of activity you see in specific areas that we basically said had to be from Hall Seiners, all direct lines, a lot of them. We know that these areas are used by recreational people, but when you see these repetitive scars going to specific spots, it is a good indication that this is being done by Hall Seiners. Well, this is back the early days. We have been watching these two sites, Browns Bay here at the mouth of the York River into the Mobjack and the Pocosin site, because these are areas that are regularly hauled. This is the prime haul site activities for five or six of the people that are, and we see them regularly. They're out there, and so you know, we watch, you know, when we're out there. This is what led to that. This is the Browns Bay area, and again, you see all these cars all going to certain points of land. This is what raised the alarm, and again, we worked very closely with the commission staff and the Hall Seiners to try to figure out how to protect grass beds without imposing additional regulations on that fishery. And so I'm going to run through these slides. Again, these are the data that come from our annual monitoring. We look at the photography, and we measure the length of every individual scar. So each one of these points, and of course, this is the time period that we raised the concern with the commission, and we had those meetings because of the extensive scarring. And so that point here represents the linear length of all the scars. But the amazing thing was we found out how quickly the scars recovered. And so when we had these meetings, and this occurred right around this time period, there was a lot of concern about, okay, do we close these areas, do we not close? And we listened to the concerns of the Hall State Fishery about how important it was to keep them open. We tried to understand the role that these beds played in the recreational fishery. But again, because these were traditional Hall State areas, the commission agreed not to close them and to try to regulate them by minimizing when they haul, the time of hauling, to minimize the propeller scarring on the grass bed. So what you see here are the flats, and ever since we started the monitoring, you haven't seen any of the type of scarring we saw back in these days. And I'm going to kind of enlarge this a little bit. This is to show that, you know, here we are in 13. We saw a little bit more in 12, but each one of these lines basically go quickly down to almost zero, meaning that the scar that was created in 2012 right there, we followed that scar in 13, and we can't find but a few linear meters of it. So these scars do recover, and again, that led, because we saw such quick recovery, it led to the fact that, okay, if there was scarring and we try to minimize it, we felt that the scarring in this time period was acceptable because it does recover and would not impose additional harsh regulations on the Hall Seine fishery. So, but I think it's important that we watch it every year. We don't want to go back to this time period. So this is Pocosin Flats. Here was Browns Bay, and again, lots of scarring. But again, if you look at how much scarring occurred here and how quickly it recovered, you know, we were, again, surprised. And I think, again, it talks about the resilience of some of these grasses. And again, these scars are only a half a meter to a meter wide, so the grasses are able to recover. And again, when you look at this time period between when we started, you know, with the monitoring, we have not seen much at all. And that's just kind of to give you a sense that we had to enlarge the scale just to be able to see where they are. So we don't see anything like we saw before. So, again, the importance of monitoring, again, we try to keep our fingers on the pulse of what's going on to make sure that this doesn't happen. And, again, you know, we try to work very closely, talk to the Hall Seiners, and they understand this position. They understand how important grass beds are. And, of course, they don't want additional regulations that they have to deal with. So I think this has been a nice compromise of, you know, preserving the resource but allowing a fishery to continue with the minimal regulations they currently have. Aquaculture issues, this is going to be a quick one. Again, as we talked about, you know, there's a lot of aquaculture going on. You've seen a lot of permits. It occurs in shallow water, and again, you have eelgrass surrounding these. You know, many areas have been grandfathered, but we do have, as Mr. Erskine pointed out, there's a regulation that says no new permits in these areas of existing SAV. So we're quite aware of that. You know, we work very closely with the habitat people here. They rely on our data and ask for our input on these things. But this was an interesting area here in Hungers Creek where here's grass, here are these clam nets that were placed on the grass. We could have worked with the law enforcement people that could have forced these people to take that, but again, there was a compromise we said, okay, let's let the clams grow. They could take out the clams, and then they wouldn't go back and put the nets back. Well, this is like, you know, 4 years later. The nets were removed a couple of years ago, and the grass bed here has recovered really fast because it's surrounded by existing grass, and this is prime habitat, again, on the lower East True Shore seaside. So, and again, some of the people who were involved in this did help us collect some seeds, and while we used the seeds for other restoration projects, we really didn't need to seed this because it was seeded naturally. And again, we have actually, you can see some of the clam nets here. This is intertidal areas, but this is all grass. So it was kind of a good compromise working with the fishery and the regulators and the enforcement people to allow this to at least continue until they could get their clams out of there and make a proper profit from that. Okay, let me move quickly to this restoration stuff. You know, again, our goal here in the seaside, which we've talked about how quickly these grass beds have been recovering, is essentially reestablishment of eelgrass and the ecosystem services this community provided. And the key service that we're looking at, as we've talked about, is the bay scallop and the success we're having. We talked about that the last time period. The next few slides I'm going to run through because they're really important to the subsequent slides that we're going to talk about regarding Hog Island Bay set-aside. Okay, so this is the figure that you guys looked at last month, and where you approved the set-aside of number one and number two and said, let's see what happens. The grasses were in the green. Well, I want to kind of show you, you know, the persistence of the grass and how quickly it recovers. So what we've done is, it's the same sort of picture, but it took out all the leases. And what I have here, this is the spread of eelgrass in the South Bay between 2001 and 2002. This is Wreck Island. This is the inlet. There's an inlet here. This is a red drum drain. The area in the box here is the area, the set-aside that we had where we basically did all of our eelgrass restoration. And the colors are coded by the areas that we mapped in subsequent years. So the really dark green were areas that we mapped in 2001. They continue. So this area here is the areas mapped in 2004. The lighter greens are 2007. And then 2010, the real light green. So what you can see is from the area that we spread eelgrass seeds, just in this area, has spread rapidly in just a decade. And I want to kind of do that to show you that, yeah, we're seeing the spread, and it's persisting in areas that we mapped every year. And then 2013 are these areas that are in this hash area. Now, what I want to do is there's the same picture with the areas 2, 3, and 4 in South Bay. So you can see how close these beds have been spreading, and we expect that, with some of the restoration effort and natural spread, that 2 will become covered with grass. And, of course, that's what we want for the bay scallops. We expect that 3 and 4 are, soon to follow, which we don't have as set aside, but we'll watch those very carefully. An area that I want to point out is actually this lease here, because for the first time since we've been working in South Bay, guess what? We've seen these circular scars in this leased area. We're not sure if this is the person who leased the bottom and did this, but we are trying to work with your staff to figure out what's going on, because, this area, actually, this is a photograph from our surveys. It was in late fall, so you can't see a lot of the grass, but it is very heavily vegetated, and this is the first time we've seen all of these scars. This was last year, so it concerns us. Now, it could be it's from the lease, but these are all shallow water areas, like less than a couple feet, so I just wanted to point out that there is some of this minimal activity. Now, the interesting thing, Hog Island Bay set-aside. This was approved in 2006, so this is High Shoal Marsh, this is Hog Island Bay, this is Hog Island, and this is the lease that we have here, the set-aside, 508 acres. All of these other polygons are leases. So following the discussion, we said, okay, there was a question, if an area shoals up, should it be given back for the lease program? And I think that elicited some very interesting discussion in our group. We said, okay, let's look at the Hog Island Bay, because we've been out there a lot. We know that there is some shoaling going on and has been going on. So what we did is, here's High Shoal Marsh, here's our set-aside. Area in the red again is the side. This area here is a very shallow water area delimited by these yellow lines. These are my yellow lines. And, we know this was really shallow because when we work out there, we've got to take a wide, swath out of here. And so what I would suggest, and I talked to Hank and Tony Watkinson, that what we do, because eelgrass is not going to grow there, that we give this back to the lease system. We could work with staff to identify it. Now, you can see our patches of grass that we've planted in here. These are the patches, and they've spread. This is actually an 08 photograph. We know that this is a pretty shallow area to begin with, and these green lines are the bathymetry. So you can see it's very, very shallow, and it's not even gotten shallower. So what we would be willing to work with the staff and come up with, and I don't think we have to have a public hearing, is to take a significant chunk that is in the shallow water and turn it back to the commission for leasing. And we know there are individuals that are very interested in it, because if you just go back, notice that all these areas are leased bottoms. Now, some of them are for clam aquaculture. Some of them have been leased for a long time for just clamming in general. But I believe that the aquaculture people are looking at additional bottoms that they can lease for aquaculture. So, again, I appreciate the discussion and understanding the compromise that needs to be made when areas do show up that are in set-asides. And we took that to heart, and we're presenting this to you with the opportunity to work with staff and turn some of that back that could be leased to the aquaculture people. So with that, in summary, just quickly, we know that for SAV distribution abundance, water quality still is the prime issue in the Bay. There's a lot of efforts to improve it, and we're hoping that those efforts will be successful, and we'll see grasses come back. We have seen that. We've seen the success of some transplanting. We do know that water temperatures in these pulse events that we've had are going to be a continuing concern. We'll have to watch this very carefully. The Chincoteague Bay and the propeller scarring, again, low levels and no scarring, but we feel that we've got to keep the monitoring every year because, there are some people that don't abide by the laws. You deal with them all the time. And I think by us keeping our fingers on the pulse of what's happening in these grass beds, it keeps some people honest. Some people maybe not, but they know that we're out here watching, and we'll come to the commission if we have some additional issues and know that you'll listen to us about what's going on. And then the aquaculture issues are challenging but requiring compromises, I've talked about. We try to work very closely with the aquaculture industry. Grass is important, aquaculture is important, and we do work with your staff to look very carefully at these issues and make sure that they're done carefully and thoughtfully. And with the Bridge of the Coastal Bays, we appreciate what you did for us last month. We took to heart the discussion that you guys had with the returning set aside, and we're bringing this forth to the commission that I think there is a portion of that that should be returned back to the lease system, to the aquaculture people. First come, first serve. And actions needed, a few things that I need you to do for me. One is we do get some money to continue the propeller scarring monitoring. And that comes, I think, partly from the fisheries, apart from the other group. So we need that from you today to continue that work. We want to work with the staff to actually come up with precise limits because we want to make sure they get the maximum amount of bottom that is appropriate. So it may require us going out with Hank and his staff to get a more accurate delineation. Those yellow lines are just me putting them on to show you that we think these areas will never support SAV and that we could create a much tighter boundary, because the more at bottom they have, the better off they are. And we know pretty much where grass is not going to grow. And generally, continue the support for our eelgrass and bay scallop restoration work. We're getting, again, funding from the Recreational Fishing License Fund. And last year, Mark, looking back, and I received a significant grant from the Army Corps to continue that. And the plus side is, of course, they like success. And we've used the VMRC fund and other monies as matching, which, again, everyone likes to see matching money when you get federal grants. And just to let you know that this program is going is supported by federal and state funds being our license. And with that, I will end up and be more than happy to answer any questions. And I thank you again for the opportunity to do this annual presentation. I've added some slides. I think they're very, very informative. And you all hear about water quality all the time because localities are dealing with it. Hampton Roads Sanitation is dealing with it. And, I'll be back here next year. Additional information.
Thank you, Dr. Orr. It's always informative and instructive. Are there questions from the commission? You need money.
Just the approval on the propeller scoring thing. And again, Ms. Erskine, if you want the report, if you send me an email, I'll send you a copy. Because, again, we went through a lot. I can tell you we spent many hours in this room working with the Hall of Fame Fishery because, they were concerned that they were being targeted. And, again, we wanted to make sure that being them's people to be a fair arbiter and making sure we had the right data to make the right decision. And that was a hard choice because the recreational people were pushing the buttons. And so, I can let you know what we've done.
Okay, thank you.
Also, the fishery have responded appropriately. And so, again, there have been very minimal regulations other than trying to make sure they don't damage the grass beds.
What's your funding request?
Funding request is $22,000. It'll take a motion for that. It's going to be split equally from the Marine Fishing Improvement Program, the Commercial Fund, and the Recreational License Fund as well.
I'll make a motion to approve the funding request.
Motion by Mr. Neal.
Second.
Second by Mr. Zegarin. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye. Motion passes unanimously.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Orr.
Anytime you need any information, I'm only email click away.
Thank you. Appreciate it.